Welcome to our Good Friday service. Tonight is going to be a little quieter on purpose. And here's why. Good Friday doesn't rush. It doesn't celebrate yet. It doesn't resolve the tension too quickly. It makes us sit in an uncomfortable part of the story. And it invites us to slow down. To slow down long enough to actually see what happened on the cross. Because if we move too quickly to Resurrection Sunday, we'll misunderstand Good Friday. And we'll treat the cross like it's a necessary step rather than a central moment. We treat it like background instead of the place where everything is revealed. And Good Friday refuses to let that happen. It brings us back to the cross and says, look again, not quickly, not casually, but clearly. So they took Jesus and he went out bearing his own cross to the place called the place of a skull, which in Aramaic is called Golgotha. There they crucified him. That's how simple the Bible says it. No dramatic language, no drawn out explanation, just they crucified him. Because the weight of this moment doesn't need exaggeration, it needs attention. Jesus, the Son of God, is nailed to an ugly, twisted representation of death, the cross. He's been rejected, he's been mocked, he's been abandoned. And at first glance, this looks like loss. It looks like failure. It looks like everything has fallen apart. The disciples thought it was the end. The crowd assumed that they'd been right to walk away. Even those closest to him scattered because this is not what they expected God to do. It's not what the disciples expected Jesus to do. It's not what generations of Israelites had expected God to do. And if we're honest, it's not what we would have expected either. But that's kind of God's thing, right? His way is better than our way, even if we don't understand it. I had a best friend growing up. Our parents were friends before we were even born. We grew up side by side. We had the same friend group. We went to the same school. We had the same classes, same life rhythms. There were times in life where I spent more time talking to her more than most anyone else sometimes. At one point, I thought I was going to marry her. From the very beginning, her life looked different. She had cystic fibrosis. Her body created a thick mucus that slowly damaged her lungs and her digestive system. There were long stretches where she'd be gone from school for months. Hospital stays became normal. Treatments became routine. And we prayed. We prayed. My family prayed. Our church prayed. Our friends prayed. We prayed for healing. We prayed for relief. We prayed for strength and for peace and for her to not be in pain anymore. She went through a kidney transplant. She had a double lung transplant. More medications that you can count. And even those medications begin to damage other parts of her body. And we kept on praying until she turned 24 and her body couldn't take it anymore. That was 20 years ago this month. And when she died, I remember asking questions that had never occurred to me. Where was God in those years, those 24 years of pain? Did all those prayers from all those people actually matter? Because in the end, it didn't look like victory, and it sure didn't look like healing. And it didn't look like the kind of end that I had prayed for, that I had asked God for. And I got to be honest, I don't have the final answers to those questions. But that's the same tension that it's okay to sit with God. We all have expectations about how God should work, how he should show up, how he should fix things, how the Jews for generations had this idea, this expectation of what the Messiah was going to be like. We expect strength, we expect clarity, we expect control, we expect that victory actually looks like victory. But the cross doesn't meet those expectations. It confronts them. Because at the cross, Jesus doesn't display power the way we would. He displays love in a way that we wouldn't choose. And if we're not careful, we'll misread it. We'll look at the cross as a weakness instead of a sacrifice. Look at it as defeat instead of purpose, tragedy instead of redemption. And that's exactly what happens when we're looking at it in the wrong way. This Sunday, we're going to look at Easter. It's the same point that we're going to be examining. I need you to hear this. The problem is not always what we're looking at. The problem sometimes is how we're actually seeing it. We tend to treat God like a mirror. We interpret everything through ourselves. Our expectations, our performances, our preferences, our definition of success. And when we do that, the cross doesn't make sense. It feels unnecessary. It feels confusing. It actually feels offensive. But the cross was never meant to be understood through us. It is meant to reshape how we see everything. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And as one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised. And we esteemed him not. Surely he has borne our grief and carried our sorrows. Yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. And with his wounds, we are healed. What looked like defeat was actually substitution. What looked like weakness was actually purpose. What seemed like the end was actually the center. Jesus is not just suffering. He is suffering for our sin, for our rebellion, for everything that we couldn't fix on our own. The cross is not an accident. It's not some tragic interruption to God's plan. It is the plan. And that changes how we see it. Because now the cross isn't just something that happened to Jesus. It's something Jesus chose for us. And that can be hard for us to really grasp, because we human beings are wired for performance. We assume that if something's wrong, we fix it. If there's a debt, we pay it or feel bad that we didn't. If there's a problem, we handle it. And that instinct bleeds into our faith. We try harder. We do more. We attempt to earn what can only be received. And the cross confronts that way of thinking. It tells us something we don't naturally believe. That we cannot fix what is broken in us. We cannot carry the weight of our own sin. We can't make ourselves right with God. So Jesus does. Completely, willingly, finally. Colossians says, "And you who were dead in your trespasses, God made alive together with him, having forgiven us all our trespasses by canceling the record of debt that stood against us. This he set aside, nailing it to the cross." The cross is where debt is canceled, not managed, not reduced, canceled. And that means something important for how we understand our relationship with God. Because if the cross is sufficient, then our performance is not the point. If Jesus paid it all, then we aren't earning anything. We are responding. And this is where we drift. We say we believe in the cross, but we live like it depends on us. We turn faith into a checklist. We measure ourselves by effort and how many times we go to church, and we carry guilt like that debt that is still outstanding. And slowly, without realizing it, we turn the cross into something smaller than it is. We reduce it to a symbol on a shirt, to a charm on a chain, instead of seeing it as the center of what God is doing for us. When we do that, everything gets distorted. There's an old story of a man who received a gift that he did not earn, a gift he didn't think he deserved. A wealthy relative paid off all his entire debt. That sounds great, doesn't it? Every bill, every loan, completely cleared. All he had to do was accept it. But instead of living like someone whose debt was gone, he kept acting like he still owed it. He kept making small payments every month. He kept cutting back on everything that he enjoyed. He kept living with the stress and anxiety of someone trying to dig themselves out of a hole that no longer existed. Finally, someone asked him, "Why are you living this way? Why are you living like this?" And he said, "I know it's been paid. I know it's been paid. But I just feel like I should be doing something." See, he couldn't shake the feeling that he needed to contribute, that he needed to prove he was grateful, that he needed to earn what he had already been given. So he kept living like a debtor, even though he was free. And the tragedy isn't that this debt was unpaid. It's that he never learned to live like it was finished. And that's exactly what we do with the cross. Jesus says it is finished, but we keep trying to make payments. We keep trying to prove ourselves. We keep trying to live like approval is something we can that we need to earn rather than something that we received. And in doing that, we miss the freedom that the cross is meant to give us. This is why Good Friday matters. Because it brings us back to clarity. It reminds us what is actually true. Jesus didn't go to the cross to make salvation possible if only we do our part. He went to the cross to accomplish it fully, decisively, out of love. And that love doesn't just forgive us, it reshapes us. Because when you see the cross clearly, you can't relate to God the same way anymore. You stop for performing. And you start trusting. You stop hiding. You start bringing your whole life to him. You stop trying to earn what has already been given. And here's what makes Good Friday heavy. Even knowing all that, it still costs something. It costs everything. After this, Jesus, knowing that all was finished, was now finished, said, "I thirst." And when Jesus had received the sour wine, he said, "It is finished." And he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. It's finished. Not it has started. Not it's almost done. It is finished. The work is complete. The sacrifice is sufficient. The price is paid. And in that moment, everything changes. Even if the world doesn't realize it yet. Even if the disciples are still confused. Even if it feels like the darkness has won. Because what looks like the end is actually the turning point. But we can't rush past it. We sit in it. We let it settle. We let the weight of it press on us because the cross is two things at the same time. It is the depth of our sin, and it is the depth of God's love. And you can't understand one without the other. The cross is where we see how serious sin really is. It required this. But it's also where we see how far God is willing to go. He didn't hold back. He didn't stay distant. He stepped in. And this is where Good Friday connects directly to Easter. I love it. Because Sunday will declare that Jesus is alive. But Friday explains why that matters. If we skip the cross, the resurrection becomes inspiring but shallow. If we sit in the cross, the resurrection becomes everything because it means the sacrifice was accepted. The debt really was paid. Death really is defeated. But tonight, we stay here at this ugly cross. Not as spectators, but as people who need it, who are invited to trust it, who are invited to stop performing and start receiving. Because Jesus is not a mirror reflecting our effort back at us. He's the one who took our place. And the cross is the lens that helps us see that clearly. So tonight, don't rush. Don't move past this too quickly. Look at the cross. Let it correct your assumptions. Let it confront your performance. And let it remind you of what is actually true. It is finished. And that's where real faith begins.